Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is a Manhattan-bound B Express train. The next stop is Grand...
Welcome to Skylines, the City Metric podcast. I'm John.
And I'm Barbara, and this week we're doing something a little bit different because John has been on holiday. So, John, where have you been?
We haven't had time to do a proper one. We'll be back next week with full regular service, but yeah, we're going to do a... Basically, I'm going to tell everyone what I did on my holidays, which is a nice little treat for you all. But it is relevant because I have been to Miami, which is... Well, firstly, it's a city, as you will probably know, and we're very big on cities around here.
Very old brand.
Yeah. But more interestingly, it's a city that's basically doomed. I mean, while I was out there, I kind of had this awareness that Miami is a very low-lying city. It's somewhere that's going to be hit by rising seawaters. If that comes to pass, it probably will. So while I was out there, I was sitting on the beach thinking, well, how big a deal is this? So I Googled it, and I spent the next hour reading a Rolling Stones long read from 2013, and I suddenly felt like I was, like, you know, parting on the deck of the Titanic. You suddenly realise that this city of, like, 5 million people is basically going to be underwater within the next 100 years, possibly a lot sooner than that. And nobody seems to have noticed. And it's a bit terrifying.
Yeah, because it seems like there's two... So I know not a lot less about this than you, but it does seem like there's two prongs to this. There's the kind of the basic geological thing, which is that Miami is... going to be prone to massive flooding. It's on kind of porous rock. It's right by the sea. It's very low-lying. But then, as ever, there's also this kind of city management perspective that it just doesn't seem like enough is being done, and it's just not the kind of local government that seems able to deal with this massive, massive problem.
Yeah, I mean, let's take those in order. Let's do the geology first. Miami is very low-lying. It's... I was looking at some figures, if waters rise by 3 feet, a third of southern Florida is gone. And that's, you know, that's enormous. But more than that, it also sits on limestone, which is porous. So the water will come up from below. And to the west of Miami, you've got the Everglades, which are a swamp. So the water will come from there as well. So the water is going to be literally everywhere as it starts rising. And that has all sorts of impacts. That will mean, the obvious one is, like, you know, you actually just get... floods all the time, but it also means salt water will get into reservoirs of drinking water, so you'd need to spend a lot more on desalination. Water sort of underground will start rotting wiring, which means there'll be blackouts, and you know, all of this starts feeding into other stuff, like, you know, somewhere down the line it's going to become harder to get a mortgage because banks literally won't believe that homes are going to be there in 30 years time. It'll be harder to get home insurance, so premiums will go through the roof because the risk is so much higher. And, you know, somewhere down the line, presumably, people are going to start leaving because of all this. But that's not happening yet. At the moment, people are still flooding there because it's, you know, glorious weather and it's quite a nice quality of life. And there does seem to be this sort of cognitive dissonance around the idea that the place could die at all.
But so do you think the sort of inaction on this, is it... down to that? Is it down to just knowing there's not enough money, or is it that there's actually just not very much you can do in those conditions? I mean, can you set up, like, big, you know, sea walls, or can you fill in the holes in the limestone? I mean, what would the solution be?
I mean, Miami has just joined the 100 Resilient Cities program, which suggests that somebody out there thinks there must be at least some hope, which
is must be resilient somewhere. Yeah,
which is positive. Yep. But it's kind of hard to see what the engineering solution is. Like that Rolling Stone piece I mentioned, they talked to some Dutch engineers who were working on protecting New Orleans from flood. And that's actually possible because you do the same kind of things you've done in the Netherlands for centuries, where you kind of divert water into channels, you raise some of the land, you can kind of put up protective seawalls. You know, that we have a plan for. Miami, the problem is just the thing where it is effectively going to be surrounded by water and on low-lying land, and you know, it's incredibly difficult to come up with an engineering solution. It doesn't mean it's impossible, but it's not obvious what it is.
So do you think that they'll just have to ditch it? I mean, is that ever a possibility with a city of that size?
I mean, I think there is just this element of cognitive dissonance which you get around climate change more generally, don't you? It's like it's unimaginable that this could happen, so you sort of assume it won't, that somewhere down the line someone will come up with a clever engineering solution and everything will be fine. Mm. But I don't think we can rule out the possibility that that's not going to happen. But you mentioned the politics of the situation are interesting, because within Miami and the sort of various associated cities and the conurbation, like Miami Beach is actually a separate city and so on, these are generally quite liberal places. They're very multicultural. There's a lot of concern about climate change within Miami itself, but it sits within a state which is much more like the old South. Like, the reason Florida is such an important swing state is basically because Miami votes Democratic and the rest of the state votes Republican. And you know, the people in the state house in Florida who control much of the money, a lot of them don't even believe in climate change. They're just not having any of it.
The Guardian had quite a good piece on this, on the kind of political side, which we can link to in the show notes. But yeah, it is kind of strange that something as obvious as this can become about ideology when it's just clear that it is going to happen. And you don't have to be, I mean, even if you want to talk about sea rises as being divorced from climate change, they are happening. So
yeah, even if you don't believe in anthropomorphic climate change, something is going on, and a low-lying place like Miami surely needs to adapt. But the city can't fund its own, even if there was some sort of multi-billion-pound infrastructure project you could do to fix this. The city probably doesn't have the resources to do that itself. And if people do start moving away, if insurance premiums go up, that's going to get harder, because so much of the city income in the US is based on local property taxes. Well, if property values fall because suddenly, you know, no one wants to spend several hundred thousand dollars on something that's going to be underwater in half a century, then that's going to hit property taxes, which will also hit the budget for infrastructure improvements that actually solve this problem.
So there
is a danger of kind of getting into a vicious circle, really. This is a very cheery episode, isn't it?
We're sending out messages of hope to the citizens of Miami, which are basically move somewhere else now. But I suppose the message then is that the government needs to do something before people catch on, in a way, that they're almost lucky that there already isn't widespread panic about this, and that people are still very keen to move there, to live there. And while they have that kind of buoyancy of their budget, they need to get investing.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, Miami is one of the cities I know best for various reasons, and it's an amazing place. You've got this sort of wonderful subtropical temperature, but it's just got a fantastic cultural mix as well, because it's got the Jewish diaspora who moved down from New York. You've got a very big Cuban population. It's a big African American city. It's very international. There's a lot of Russian tourists in the part we go to, for reasons I'm not quite sure. But it does just kind of have that sort of feeling of energy and all these different cultures rubbing up against each other that I think makes all the best cities worth living. And, you know, at the moment, people still are going there in droves.
Yeah.
It's just interesting to think that, like, it's just so weird. It's felt like a microcosm for the whole climate change thing, where I was just sat there in this sort of paradise, reading about how, like, the place is going to flood, possibly, very probably,
that beautiful sea is going to get closer and closer and closer.
I mean, they have to import sand because so much of it gets washed away. So somewhere down the line, if they can't afford to do that anymore, all the beaches would just become, like, you know, rugged bits of limestone. Mm-hmm. It's just crazy.
And I guess the depressing thing as well is that inevitably as this happens gradually, because obviously it won't be one giant tidal wave, it'll kind of be eroding at the edges of the city. But that, things like that always end up having a class implication, because there are probably people who can afford to build a raised home to live on, or but it's those kind of maybe minority groups or less well-off groups who will be forced out. So even if some element of Miami is preserved, it might be this kind of walled city of people who could invest in staying there.
I mean, maybe. I mean, that's definitely always a risk. I wonder, though, if actually it'll be the rich who find it easiest to jump to ship when the time comes. Because it's not as if just everyone's going to wake up one day and the place is underwater. It's going to be like a series of escalating. Mm-hmm. So it'll be like a Hurricane Katrina type thing, where it becomes clear that the city is in danger and all the insurance premiums go through the roof and people leave, and a lot of and the vital infrastructure starts decaying because there's not enough money to, and it becomes that sort of vicious circle. So
which kind of dystopia are we looking at? That's the question. Right, well,
if anyone out there listening has any ideas for saving Miami or any other cities in similar danger, then do get in touch, because we really want a happy ending here.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.